Hi, it's Charlie Connolly here. I write every week in the New European on books and literature and great European lives. If you'd like to enjoy more from the New European, you can join us by subscribing at theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. Great European Lives from the New European. Zinaida Serebryakova, 12th of December 1884 to the 19th of September 1967. The winter of 1909 came early to Russia. One morning, in the house on her family estate at Neskuchnoye, in what's now Kharkiv, Ukraine, Zinaida Serebryakova looked out of the window at the snowy landscape, then sat down at her dressing table. Bare-shouldered, she was grateful for the fire burning in the hearth. When she looked in the mirror and began to comb her hair, Serebryakova was struck by the milkiness of the wintry light on her skin. How it made everything luminous, somehow. She put down her comb and picked up her sketch pad. The sketch became a watercolour of Serebryakova in the act of combing her long, dark hair. Eyes sparkling, a smile playing on her closed lips, her dressing table strewn with scent bottles, powder puffs, a string of pearls, and a small cushion stuck with brightly coloured hat pins. At the dressing table is joyously informal. An intimate self-portrait of a woman entirely content with life and the world. It wasn't painted with a view to exhibition. She just wanted to capture a moment on a morning when she felt warm and safe and happy. Her brother, Yevgeny, persuaded her to add the picture to the dozen or so canvases she was sending to the 1910 Union of Russian Artists exhibition in St. Petersburg. At the dressing table was the hit of the show. So much so it was purchased for display by the specialist fine art Tretiakov Gallery in Moscow, where it still hangs to this day. That morning, as the snow fell silently and the flames crackled in the hearth, Zinaida Serebryakova was immersed in a decade-long period of almost unadulterated contentment. In later life, she would look back on that morning, think about that portrait, and wonder if she could ever feel like that again, even for a moment. Neskuchnoye, which means never dull, belonged to her mother's family, the Benois, who had fled the Great Terror in Paris and settled in St. Petersburg during the 1790s, in the culturally rich twilight of the reign of Catherine the Great. Serebryakova's uncle, Alexander Benois, was a well-known artist and a set designer for Sergei Diaghilev's Ballet Russe. Her mother was a talented sketch artist, and her father, Yevgeny Nikolaevich Lonkare, was a noted sculptor, all ensuring that art would be a part of young Zinaida's life from the cradle. Serebryakova never really knew her father. He died of tuberculosis when she was 2 years old. So she was brought up a Benois. Summers were spent at Neskuchnoye, the rest of the year in a sumptuous apartment next door to the Mariinsky Theatre in St. Petersburg. But alongside the Benois, she retained a strong streak of Lonkare. Zina grew up a rather ailing and unsociable child, wrote her uncle Alexander, in which she resembled her father more than her mother and sisters, who were all merry and sociable. She was accepted into the Princess Tenesheva Art School in St. Petersburg in 1901, where she became a protégé of the noted realist Ilya Repin. Her studies were interrupted when her mother, as Serebryakova suffered a bout of ill health with a Russian winter ahead, took her to Italy for 8 months, where she haunted the galleries, studying the Renaissance masters. Back in St. Petersburg, she became a student at the studio of Osip Bratz, who encouraged his students to copy portraits displayed at the city's Hermitage Gallery, while thinking about their use of light and richness of colour, two major aspects of what would become Serebryakova's own style. Her summers on the family estate in Ukraine lent her the opportunity to work on landscapes as well as portraits, and especially the paintings of peasant women at work that would become almost her trademark. Sarah Briakova saw dignity beneath the headscarves, and she managed to capture the women's combination of strong-willed individualism and their cooperation in the fields, their lives bound by the rhythms and rituals of the agricultural year. It was out in those same fields during her 21st summer at Neskuchnoye that she fell in love with her first cousin, Boris Serebryakov, a railway engineer also spending his summer in the country. After a swift courtship, the couple sought and won family approval for marriage, despite their being closely related. A hefty donation helped to convince the Russian Orthodox Church to marry the cousins in September 1905. Away from the newlyweds' rural idyll, unrest had been building across Russia. A combination of social and economic issues fermented a wave of revolutionary uprisings that brought chaos onto the streets of St. Petersburg, that prompted Serebryakova and her family to relocate to Paris for the winter of 1905. With her mother, she enrolled at the prestigious Académie de la Grande Chaumière, but was alarmed to find Paris engulfed by a torrent of abstractionism. A million miles from the peasant scenes, landscapes and nudes still popular at home. Instead of the classroom, she inhabited art galleries, studying and making copies of works by the likes of Monet, Degas and Delacroix. By the spring of 1906, Russia was simmering but calm enough for the family to return, this time permanently to Neskuchnoye. The couple's first child, Yevgeny, was born soon afterwards and three more followed. The decade between her return to Russia and the revolution of October 1917 constituted the happiest, most settled and creatively fulfilling years of Serebryakova's life. 1917 should have marked her creative peak. She produced two of her best works, Sleeping Peasant and Bleaching Cloth, and was nominated for membership of the Academy of Arts. The revolution erupted before her membership could be ratified, and 18 months later, Boris was arrested in Moscow during the Red Terror, contracted typhus, and died in prison. In the spring of 1919, Bolsheviks arrived at Neskuchnoye, ransacked it, and burned it to the ground. Now a widowed mother of four children, not to mention caring for an elderly mother, Serebryakova left the smouldering ruins and made for St. Petersburg. It was there in 1920 that she painted House of Cards, a study of her children around a table, building a tower from a deck of playing cards. In contrast to the vivacity of her previous work, all four of them look sullen and glassy-eyed, their task a joyless one. 4 years of uncertainty and financial insecurity followed. Frequently she had to barter paintings for food and clothing, until Serebryakova sent some of her work to a travelling exhibition in the United States. Two of them were purchased for sums high enough to fund a visit to Paris in 1924. Portrait commissions had been hard to come by in St. Petersburg, and a spell in France, she thought, might produce enough lucrative work to ward off the financial pressures at home. She wouldn't be gone long, she told her children, and things would be much better when she returned. Serebryakova had been in Paris for just a few days when the Soviet Union closed its borders. When she tried to return, she was turned away. Distraught, she remained in Paris, living frugally and sending home as much of the money she made from portraits as she could, making increasingly desperate pleas to the Soviet authorities. Grudgingly, in 1926, her youngest son Alexander was allowed to join her, and 2 years later her daughter Katya was also permitted to leave, their joy at being reunited with their mother tempered by the wrench of leaving their siblings behind. Both also proved to be gifted artists, and between them the family carved out a comfortable life in exile, creating portraits mainly of fellow Russian émigrés, as well as works for exhibitions across Western Europe. But they never lost that sense of fracture underpinning their existence, the feeling their household was incomplete. The Second World War brought more hardship. Shortly after the Germans arrived in Paris in 1940, Serebryakova was threatened with arrest. Her correspondence with the family she hadn't seen in nearly two decades was classed as illegal communication with an enemy nation. To stay out of prison, she was forced to renounce her Russian citizenship, extinguishing any hope she might have nurtured of ever returning home. It would be 6 years before she had any further contact with her children in Russia, and it would take until 1960 for her daughter Tatiana to be granted permission to visit her mother in Paris, 36 years after Serebryakova had bade her children a temporary farewell. Tatiana proved to be her mother's artistic champion in the Soviet Union, organising an exhibition of her work as well as lobbying for her mother to finally be allowed to return. In 1965, more than 40 years after she left, Serebryakova travelled to Moscow to see her own exhibition. 80 years old, she stood alone in front of At the Dressing Table and saw a flawless vision captured in the snowy light of a different age, a different world, a different self. Great European Lives is brought to you by The New European. It's written and presented by Charlie Connolly, and the series producer is Steve Anglesey.